Welcome to Florida.
That is the voice of New York Times bestselling author and award-winning environmental reporter Craig Pittman. My name is Chad Scott, and this is Welcome to Florida. And I was very interested in Craig's most recent article for FloridaPhoenix.com. FloridaPhoenix.com is where you can read his new work. Every Thursday, he publishes a new article or commentary. And this week, a success story. Good news for the environment and conservation. And I think really the only blueprint available for how to replicate success at pushing back development in Florida.
That's why I wanted to tell this story, is that these folks, they found out that a Georgia company, the Southwest Georgia Oil Company, was coming into their county and was planning to build this big 16 pump gas station / convenience store / car wash on a 7-acre parcel of property that previously had been just pine trees. And then they figured out that, wait a minute, this is right over one of the underground caves that funnels water into Wakulla Springs, which is, you know, the world's largest freshwater springs. And this is that aquifer that it's flowing through. That's where we get our drinking water from. We're worried that, you know, gas stations, gas is on the ground all the time. And what if it leaks down through the sandy soil into these underground caves? Is it going to end up in the aquifer? Is it going to end up in the springs? And there was a scientific group, Woodville Karst Plain Project, WKRP, like WKRP in Cincinnati, that actually did some research on it and said, yeah, this is a serious possibility. We did a dye test. Anything dropped in this particular cave ends up in Wakulla Springs 8 days later. So, you know, a huge number of people turned out to complain about it and actually bombarded the planning board with complaints and then showed up at the county commission. And at the county commission meeting last week, the county commissioner's like, whoa, it's okay. They pulled the application. Pulled the application to change the comp plan. And people were like, we don't care. We want to tell you what's wrong with it just in case they come back.
And they will. Where I live on Amelia Island, there is a similar effort to turn what is low density residential into high density residential and replace two or three small businesses with like 16 homes. And every time the developer brings this back to the city council, people get all up in arms. They take it away. They bring it back. They try and tweak this. They try and tweak that. What you're talking about is in the panhandle just outside of Tallahassee, but it really goes on everywhere. And there have been some notable successes on this front in North Florida, fighting new toll roads, but it's really uniform, massive, public, in-person county commission meetings, planning board meetings, filling those rooms with people hostile and willing to voice their opposition to more and wider development. That is the only thing I've seen be successful in this state in stemming the tide.
And it's not easy. It's sometimes local governments meet at inconvenient hours, or they put the public response portion at the end of the agenda, hoping everybody will get tired and go home. Yeah. And in this case, the county commission meeting started at 5 p.m. Well, a lot of people are just getting off work right then. It's hard for them to get to the courthouse in time.
Sure.
But 150 people showed up for this commission meeting.
And it's tough. And this goes back to the episode we had with Jeff Vandermeer about, you know, being an engaged citizen. And, you know, you've had a long day of work. You're banging out rent. You're fighting with your wife. Your car won't start. Your kids have practice. And now you're expected to go to a county commission meeting at 7:30 and sit around for an hour and a half to give a 3-minute speech about, you know, a 16 pump gas station that's going to be sited right over top of the springs. Unfortunately, with the way the deck is stacked in this state, it's hard.
You can't let somebody else do the fighting for you. You got to do it yourself. If you want a decent environment, you have to be the one to step up and talk about it.
And fortunately, these grassroots organizations have in the past couple of weeks made some real nice wins, and Craig details one. FloridaPhoenix.com. This week's episode of the podcast brought to you by Visit Sarasota. Check out visitsarasota.com. And one of the great Sarasota attractions dating all the way back to 1939, and that is the Sarasota Jungle Gardens, one of the top family attractions in the area. You get your picture with a parrot and the kids are feeding flamingos and they've got a petting zoo and you can touch an alligator and do all this kind of stuff. Save money when you buy tickets online at SarasotaJungleGardens.com, one of the oldest continuing operated attractions in Florida. Like I said, open since 1939. Great for the kids. All kinds of interactive and hands-on sort of activities to do it. So check out the Sarasota Jungle Gardens, SarasotaJungleGardens.com, and visit Sarasota.com. That takes us across the state to Miami.
Yeah. A lot of people these days are loving to read cozy mysteries. They really like cozies, you know, that sort of the small town mystery where some amateur is jumping in to try and figure out what nefarious doings are behind the small town facade. And what we're going to talk to an author who has written one of those small town mysteries, but set in the big city of Miami. And it to me opens up a whole new genre or subgenre, I should say, of mysteries where it's part of this whole wave of Florida cozies that we're starting to see now, of cozy mysteries that are set in Florida, different parts of Florida, some in beach towns, some in the panhandle. This one is set in Miami, and Raquel Reyes is just I'm reading the book right now. It's really good. It's really good.
Raquel V. Reyes is the author. You can find her on social media at Latina Sleuth. The book is Mango, Mambo, and Murder. Here we go with Raquel.
Raquel, thanks so much for joining us today, and congratulations on all the publicity your book has gotten. It's not every debut author who gets written up by the New York Times.
So exciting.
Tell me about the genesis of this book, because it is very different from most of the cozy mysteries that you read. That Florida element of it, I think, really gives it a different flavor.
Sure. You know, I like to call it a city cozy, even though it's not entirely set in Miami. It's set within a village within Miami-Dade, the greater metro area. But, you know, it's got a little bit more of, I don't want to say an edge, because it doesn't have an edge. It's still a cozy, but it certainly has what a city offers you, which is a lot of diversity. Yeah. And I've always wanted to make, when I've been reading cozies, I thoroughly enjoyed them. I loved them, but I just didn't see myself reflected in them or my culture reflected in them. And I certainly didn't see Miami reflected in them. There's a lot of great crime fiction that is set in Miami. And, you know, there's even something called Miami Noir, you know, which is kind of, there's about, what, five or six authors who fit into that description, you know, that's kind of like, but there wasn't cozies. And I was like, you know, I really wanted to represent the softer side of Miami with a little bit of an edge and a little bit of Spanglish.
Yeah. So. Well, now explain to our listeners who may not be familiar with the term. What is a cozy? I mean, I think you kind of hint at it when you mentioned that your detective is a fan of Murder, She Wrote. But
yeah, exactly. That's the perfect definition of it. But basically what you need for a cozy is the violence and gore is going to happen off page. So you're not going to have to read about the act of the crime. It's the aftermath of the crime and solving the puzzle. The sex is also off page. You know, there could be a little peck on the cheek and, you know, maybe, you know, some innuendo for consensual, married, committed couples. But, you know, that's about it. It's not a romance, you know, not at all.
Yeah.
It happens in a community. So, you know, all of the, you know, the cast of characters. And because most cozies are series, you are going to get to know these characters through several books. And that's kind of what the great thing is like, you know, you fall in love with your protagonist and then the best friend and then the person who owns the little shop down the road. And, you know, that whole community. And you follow them through the whole career of the series.
Yeah, you build this world that has no sex and no cussing and no blood.
I have a little, you know, the thing about no cussing kind of ruffles my feathers, and maybe that's because I'm a city girl. Sometimes you just have to cuss. And so I do slip in a few cuss words in mine, but they are in Spanish. So because I don't know a lot of Cubans who don't, you know, let a carajo or coño fly out every once in a while.
But I think that's what helps set it apart from the all of the, I'm just going to call them white cozies that have come out before you. It really lives. It really breathes.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, I mean, it is a culinary cozy, which is kind of like a subgenre of all of the other cozy stuff.
Oh, really? Well, how do you mean?
We've done all those little categories of what meets a cozy, right? And also for a cozy, let me say that the person solving the crime is an amateur sleuth. They are not a police detective. They didn't go to FBI school.
You know, not Jack Reacher without the punching.
Exactly.
And
no. Although that would be interesting. But anyway. And then within those, there's kind of like these subcategories. So there's culinary cozies, which is something that I write. And there's another great culinary cozy by Nia Manasala. It doesn't happen in Florida, but it's a great culinary cozy. Then you have like paranormal cozies. Carol Perry writes a paranormal cozy set. Well, she likes a lot of paranormal cozies. She writes one that happens up in Salem, but she writes one that happens in Florida called the Haunted Haven Mystery Series.
Oh.
And it's super fun. The first book just came out on that, and I recommend that. Then you have kind of like the craft ones. So it happens in a quilt shop. It happens, in a glass workshop. Cheryl Holland has a series set in St. Pete, Florida, and it happens in Webb's Glass Shop. And it's called the Webb's Glass Shop Mystery.
Huh. My wife was interested in writing cozy romance for a while, really got into the Hallmark stuff, the Hallmark movies, and is still into that. And it just astonished me, the sub-genres and different avenues you could take this. Well, in this genre, you can do that, but you can't do this. In this genre, you can do that, but you can't do this. And it goes to show, you know, this myth that people don't read books anymore is totally out of the water, because these are niches of niches of niches that support numerous authors like yourself.
And cozy readers read a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot.
Now, our mutual friend Tamara Lush, she writes a cozy series for the same publisher you do that's set in a coffee shop. Does that count as a culinary mystery too?
Oh, I think it does, because she often talks like, I think she's got like five ingredient desserts that go along with the coffee. So I absolutely count it as a culinary cozy. I love that one. Happens on Devil. I think she called her make-believe town Devil's Beach.
Yes,
and it's super cute. Coffee Lover Mystery Series. Love
and,
that.
And
one.
The coffee shop is called Purgatory,
which is the best name.
That's great. Yeah.
She's got quirky characters in hers, and so that doesn't have to be what's in a cozy, but often there are some really fun quirky characters. The characters are memorable, and that's what leads you from book to book to book to book. It's like, oh, you want to know what that one's doing, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I like too that you get in your book in particular, you get sort of a different communities. It's not just one community. You've got the snooty white upper class Coral Shores community that she's living in now, but also she touches base in the
Hialeah.
Yes.
I love Hialeah, so I had to give Hialeah some props. So you know, my main character is she's Cuban American. Mm-hmm. And she's married into a white founding family kind of thing. You know, they founded the town. They have trust funds. They go to the Ivy League
galas and social things.
Exactly. And she's really working class. And that was her upbringing on that. So, you know, that's really fun to play off those two different things. It creates some tensions.
Yeah. Big time.
But also
the mother-in-law, for instance.
But also, I think that's more and more, that's the way people are living. You know, we're not a monoculture anymore. We never really were here in America, but even more so now. And, you know, I've been getting feedback from the people who are reading my books and so forth. And they may not be Cuban American or Puerto Rican or Dominican. They may not come from the Caribbean. They may not even be, you know, Latinx, Latin. But they come from two different cultures, and so that they can relate so well to the character having to have one foot in one culture and one foot in the other. And some of those little spats that come out between how do you mesh two cultures together within one family?
Let's see. That seems very realistic. And that's sort of contrast to me, at least, to the whole idea of this mystery is entirely set in Cabot Cove.
A lot of cozy mysteries are set in these little small towns out in the middle of nowhere, which, you know, I love, and they can maybe get away with being a monoculture. I can't. I put mine in Miami. That's not going to happen.
Yeah. How many real place names and actual restaurants or streets or apartment buildings do you use in the story, or do you veil everything in at least some anonymity?
I try to veil things. So all of the names in Coral Shores, which is a made-up town, it's kind of a mismatch of about three different little towns in Miami, because Miami-Dade is like huge. I think it might be even the largest county in all of the United States. It's something ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. So we have all these little cities and municipalities within Miami-Dade. So I had a lot to choose from. So I renamed all of those, and they're very cozy names. Like, I said it next to Biscayne Bay. Biscayne Bay is real. Cannot change that. That's right. Real. But all the names in the little town are like manta ray, seahorse, parrotfish, dolphin. You know, I kind of gave them all kind of cozy names. But then when she goes outside of there, you know, I might name a real place. Like one of the restaurants that she eats in has a big Puerto Rican flag on it. That's a real place. And anybody who'd been to Miami, they would recognize it instantly. Now, I just make sure that I would never put a murder in a real place like that. You know, I wouldn't do that. But if it's a historical place that is recognizable to anyone who has been in Miami or who lives in Miami, I'm going to name it that. You know, I'm going to name it by its name.
How do you balance the sort of the comedy with the seriousness of it? Because it starts off in a very sort of comical way with the murder victim going face first into a tuna casserole or whatever, you know. Yeah. but you've got to, you know, it's obviously a serious question.
You know, well, there's gallows humor always, but not necessarily in this, because nothing grotesque happens. There's nothing, you know, murder is violent, of course. But it's not, you know, your CSI true crime kind of stuff that's happening there.
Yeah.
You know, most of the humor, I think, comes from, like, I would never joke about death, but you kind of joke about all of some of the other things around it. And you certainly need to keep it light. I mean, I'm a reader of cozies. You know, that's how I got into becoming a writer of cozies. I just fell in love with them. You know what you get, and you know you're going to have a good time reading it, and you know at the end of the book you're going to be satisfied because justice is served, right?
Yeah.
And so the humor has to come from the characters and situations, and I think that when you have two strong personalities like I do in this book, you know, of course, one hopes that your main character is a strong personality. You know, she's our leading personality. And then you have this other person, the mother-in-law, as you referred to her, M-I-L, the mother-in-law, who's a strong personality. I mean, we just had to laugh at it because I'm also talking about some things like racism and colorism and xenophobia.
Microaggressions
because of the differences in the cultures between the mother and the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law. And so that could get really heavy, which doesn't fit in a cozy. But if you tackle them in a humorous kind of way and you put that realness to them, I think it opens things up for discussion. It makes you connect with the characters. You know, I think when we are all able to laugh together, it's much easier for us to have conversations about other serious things, right? Yeah. Because we've made a friendship, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about that because cozies are escapism in a lot of respects and can be considered beach reads. This is not something that you want to, you know, really dig in on and, you know, keep you up at night and grind your teeth over. it's entertainment. So when you include that in your books, what sort of pushback do you get from editors or, a raised eyebrow here and there that, maybe this is a bit too real for what we're after?
You know, I have a wonderful editor and my publisher, and very happy with him. I have not gotten pushback on any of those things, except, you know what I get pushback on? The sex part of it. Mm-hmm. I think I had a word. I mean, they did it. They're a married couple. Okay.
Yeah.
And they have a child.
Yeah.
So we can, put two and two together.
They know how that works now. Right. They know how that happens.
And I forgot what I put. I thought it was relatively innocent, but I got a little note that said, maybe we should change this word. And I'm like, okay, but that's like all, come on. Like, you want me to change a word or get rid of this one sentence? Mm-hmm. I'm cool with that. It wasn't like a whole scene or anything. I was just like, I was trying to make it real.
Yeah. It's not like they said, hey, put less Spanish in here or something like that.
No, and thankfully not. I mean, I think that the industry has gone through this wonderful renaissance in the last few years. And that is probably because a lot of people have been screaming and pushing for it. But still, I would like to call it a renaissance because, I think it would be wonderful for us to have a renaissance of in the mystery world. There's a lot less pushback for that. When I first started out, I would get coded pushback about the fact that I had Spanglish in my stuff. But that's how I talk. That's how so many people do speak.
Sure.
And it's just a natural way of talking. And it isn't that the reader isn't going to be able to figure it out from context clues.
Yeah.
You have to trust the writer. We know who we're writing for. We know that they're reading in English. We're not going to pull some nonsense on them and not get our point across.
Yeah. Well, it's not like you're using the Spanish to hide clues to the mystery either.
That would be a whole different thing. And I'm not up for that.
Yeah.
What about the very specific Miami setting? Do you think that limits the audience or engages more people who would be in it because of the backdrop?
Well, I hope that it invites some new readers into it. And I mean, that's what we always want to be doing, is we always want to be welcoming and inviting and say, hey, come pick up this book, right? And I think so many people have moved to cities. I know everybody's talking about that everybody's moving out, but I live in Miami. I know how many people are
moving to Miami. A lot of them are moving to Miami, that's for sure.
Every single day, right?
Yeah.
With Miami, we have so much more that I can play with. We're a tourist mecca. We are a cruise boat. I think we're the largest cruise boat port of all, or the top three. Yeah. There's so much fun that I can have here in Miami with crime. And come on, we're Florida. We have some wacky crimes.
True.
And cozies don't have to just be a murder mystery. It can be some other type of crime too, if you do it right.
Plus the fact that your main character is getting this job at a sort of a Telemundo type Univision network opens it up for readers across the Caribbean to read it too.
So my main character is a food anthropologist, and her specialty is Caribbean diaspora. So I get to talk about all of these things. I mean, I'm mostly talking about the Spanish speaking islands, but I'm also bringing in Jamaica. I'm also bringing in Haiti. And further along, I'll be bringing in some of the other island nations too. Broward, which is the county up from Dade, has a huge, and some of North Dade too, has a very large Caribbean population. Being that this is a culinary cozy, I can literally go to the roti shop and go taste the stuff that I'm going to be writing about. I have a roti shop kind of near where I live, so I don't have to go all the way. It's not like I have to go that far. And of course, Miami has such a large Haitian community. I actually live close to Little Haiti. I can get the best food, from these little hole in the wall places that is delicious. I don't think it detracts at all. I think being in Miami adds so much opportunity.
Yeah.
Well, and I love the little details that you have in there about life there, like where she's trying to prepare a particular dish, so she goes to different Publixes because she knows which one has the correct the correct
right
selection.
Well, the supermarket near her doesn't, because right. it's mostly catering to the Coral Shores people, so she's got to go over to the Caribbean market. Yeah. Yeah, it's I have fun with that, although I will say that is the hardest part of writing this series is perfecting the recipes, because it does have a couple of recipes in the back. Writing recipes is hard if you're just a dash of this, glug of that kind of cook.
So. You talk about your protagonist being a food anthropologist, which brings up a back episode we had all about the Cuban sandwich. Do you have opinions on the Cuban sandwich and what it is or isn't?
I do, Tampa, but I'm not going to start a flame war. Food changes like culture changes, and I get that. I will take my Hialeah Cuban sandwich any day of the week, extra pickles. Thank you very much. That's all I'm saying about that matter.
Do you have a background in food? What prompted you to come up with the idea of a food anthropologist? Because that is so different from the normal cozy detective background. But it's
right,
a brilliant.
Right. I'm not making cupcakes. It's not a bakery. Right. All that stuff. Which I love a good bakery. But I wanted her to be an academic. I just love that. I wish somebody had given me a chunk of money so that I could have gone and gotten a master's and a PhD, because I just wasn't going to go into student debt. I love that kind of go down a rabbit hole kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I needed my character to be something I would enjoy writing for a long time. Yeah. And I love doing that stuff. I mean, if you give me an archaeological mystery, I will pick that up in a heartbeat. Anthropology is, the cultural version of that. Mm-hmm. And I adore that. It's super easy for me to spend way too long researching a minute detail that isn't even going to be in the book.
What sort of literary scene is there in Miami?
Oh, my goodness. So, Miami has the Miami Book Fair, which is huge. It happens downtown Miami at the Miami-Dade Wolfson campus. They close off all of the blocks around there. I mean, it's like, I don't know, two city blocks long. They have this huge street fair. They have a week of all these authors that come through there. And then I vaguely remember, like, maybe in the early 2000s, like, even Miami was listed as one of the most literary towns because of the number of books they bought. And I was just really surprised by that. Not because but I was like, all right, Miami, way to go. But I think thankfully we have an independent bookstore chain down here in Miami called Books and Books. Mitch Kaplan has done amazing things. He's also the founder of the Miami Book Fair.
He's been a guest on the podcast.
He's a great guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he brings in some incredible big name talent. People show up and listen to it. People are interested in it. Now, as far as like writers being here, I think just writers, we're all in our little writing cave most of the time anyhow. So maybe we're not, socializing as much, and especially in a town that's this spread out.
Yeah.
But I'm a member of Mystery Writers of America, and Mystery Writers of America has a Florida chapter, and we are 300 something strong or so forth. So even just in the mystery genre, how many writers are here in the state? Florida has a great history of some literary luminaries. I think we do a pretty good job of representing it, out in the greater world. But Miami is special. It's a little bit different than the rest of Florida. And I think sometimes we get some writers who come down from other places to come live down here and enjoy our beautiful weather and so forth that maybe don't write about Florida. But I'm super interested in writing about Florida. I think there's so much here. We're such a diverse state. South Florida is so different from North Florida. Mm-hmm. The Keys alone are just amazing. you know, the Everglades, there's so many bodies buried in the Everglades, right? I mean, there's just so much to write about.
The alligators need something. They do.
And don't forget those snakes too. We're growing them big, man.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, I went to a panel of Florida authors at VoucherCon, which is the big convention for mystery writers and their fans that they held here in St. Pete in 2018. And somebody asked, why are there so many mysteries set in Florida? And one of the panelists said, because there's so many great places to hide a body.
You obviously have a tremendous fondness for Miami. What is your favorite aspect of living there?
It's the Biscayne Bay. I live, thankfully, close to the water. I don't live on the water. Can't afford that. Writers don't make that much money. But, you know, in my daily commute and so forth and so on, I can always catch a little glimpse of the bay. And that is a wonderful thing. I don't love, if your next question is, what is the thing I don't like? Sometimes there's a really bad traffic, especially when we get, like a couple of weekends ago, we had the boat show, which brings in these ridiculously large yachts and craziness and so forth. And yeah, I could do without that traffic, but most of the rest of the time, it's fabulous. Oh, and we have Art Basel, which is this huge global art fair that comes to town.
Right.
I mean, for culture, it's a great town.
Yeah, I would say for contemporary art culture, Miami, nothing's ever going to be New York. But when you're talking about second place, Miami, L.A., I mean, it's in that conversation. And thanks to Art Basel and a lot of the culture that is extended into the Caribbean and Latin America from there, it is a global hotspot for arts and culture. And that's no just me talking as a Floridian. I mean, I cover arts nationally for a side job, and Miami is on the circuit with any, you know, London, Paris, Berlin, Hong Kong,
Seoul, all the filming all we have here. We have a ton of filming here. So many things are filmed here. There's a film shoot all the time. And as Craig mentioned earlier, we have, you know, a couple of Spanish language networks that are here. So, you know, I have passed telenovelas being filmed on the street, you know, and just looked over and go, oh, yeah, I live in Miami. That's a telenovela.
That's right. This week's episode of Welcome to Florida brought to you by Visit Sarasota. And I mentioned an organization a couple of weeks ago, a nonprofit, the Conservation Foundation of the Gulf Coast, which does work in Sarasota County and also Sarasota Audubon. Now, the Conservation Foundation of the Gulf Coast and Sarasota Audubon are working with county leaders there to reimagine some county-owned land right adjacent to the celery fields. We've talked about the celery fields before, 440 acres of exceptional bird habitat, world-renowned, in fact, among birders who come from all over to see the huge variety of species at the celery fields. Well, Conservation Foundation of the Gulf Coast and Sarasota Audubon is hoping to rewild this area right adjacent to the celery fields, creating more native meadows, more native woodlands, walking trails, picnic areas, ADA-compliant walkways, a birding observation platform, and they hope to have this project completed in 2023, so next year already. If you want to learn more about the celery fields, birding in Sarasota, visit sarasotaaudubon.org, and to begin planning your next weekend getaway or week's vacation in Sarasota, check out visitsarasota.com.
Let's say I'm interested in starting a Florida-based cozy series. What advice would you give me? Like, for instance, I know that, and it seems like a lot of them are just getting started here now. I think there's one in set in the panhandle that revolves around beer.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a great one. Jackson Sea Glass Saloon Mystery Series.
Yes.
That's a great one. Yes. Yes. Sherry Harris.
So what advice would you give someone who wants to get started writing cozy mysteries in Florida?
Well, I highly suggest you live here or at least spend part of the time here.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a lot of people who live here 3 to 6 months out of the year. You know, we'll adopt you. You know, we'll call you a Florida. It's okay. One is know the genre for sure. And one of the best ways to do that is to be part of a writer's group. I highly suggest Mystery Writers of America. I highly suggest Sisters in Crime. is another great group. I'm also a member of another group called Crime Writers of Color. But you need to know the tropes, the devices, and all of those other things. I also happen to be the co-chair of Sleuthfest, which is a mystery writing conference.
Yes. Yes.
I like to call Sleuthfest my do-it-yourself MFA. I did not get an MFA, but I've been to enough craft writing conferences that I feel that I really kind of have an MFA. I just put it together over many, many years and pieced it together. But you need to know how to write plot. You know, you can definitely get a great book and learn how to write plot on that. But isn't it wonderful to hear about it from the pros who are doing it all the time? And that's the great thing about going to a writing craft conference. And I highly suggest going to Sleuthfest, and especially if you're in Florida, just hop on over. This year it's in July.
Where's the location? And I'm sorry, and how can people learn more about that?
Yeah, go to sleuthfest.com. And it is in Deerfield Beach. We usually stay in South Florida. Sometimes we head up over into Orlando. It's a great conference. It's 4 days. This year, it's July 7th through 10th. Registration's open. Go check it out. We also have a forensics track for it. So it's not just cozy writers. It's any crime fiction writer. Our forensic track is always a lot of fun.
They know where all the bodies are buried.
Yeah. Well, we have some pros that come in who do, you know, like really kind of tech stuff with, with our
very
people.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a lot of fun. I mean, I don't need it for writing a cozy. So I kind of just peek in the door.
Who are your influences? I have to tell you, in reading the dialogue, Alma, the best friend, reminds me of Lupe Solano from
Carolina Garcia Aguilera.
Thank you. Yes. Oh, you got it right there. Yes.
Yeah. Of course, she was an influence for me because she's a detective. That's a PI. That's a private investigator.
But she's in Miami. Yeah.
Right. And but so I'm saying that it falls outside of kind of like this cozy genre. It falls into a different little subgenre. But she's a Cuban American. And so, of course, when I found that on the shelf, I was like, oh, finally, I see somebody. And the way she describes like the parrots going over her office, I was like, yep, everyday life here in Miami. I love that. No, I love that. Yeah, I've had some influences. There was a series early on when I was first kind of getting into this that was called the Mommy Track series by Waldman. And I really liked that one. She went into some Jewish Orthodox communities. So I've always been interested in like the cultures, the different cultures. Mm-hmm. I really love that. And I feel that that also informed me in what I wanted to do and kind of how to be respectful to represent the other culture besides the dominant culture. I love Ellie Griffith. She's got an archaeological character called Ruth Galloway. I love her. It kind of gets into the suspense kind of stuff because there's a lot of some suspense in there. But what she informed me, my writing, was how to be an academic, because she is a teacher of archaeology who's out there in the field doing stuff. I really enjoyed that aspect of it. So, and then Elizabeth Peters, which I think she's a pretty well-known name as far as like that. Amateur sleuth and so forth. I think maybe you graduated from Nancy Drew to Agatha Christie to Elizabeth Peters. You know, that's like kind of like this first three steps. Yeah.
The gateway drugs.
Exactly.
Raquel V. Reyes has been our guest. You can find her on social media at Latina Sleuth. The latest book, Mango Mambo and Murder. I will put a link in the show notes to purchase.
One last question. When is the next book in the series coming out?
This year, we're in 2022, right?
Yes, we are.
I've forgotten what year we are. November of this year.
Oh, okay. Great. I'll mark the calendar.
Raquel, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Craig, you are not quite all the way through Mango, Mambo, and Murder. And I guess it was.
I'm really hoping the mother-in-law is the killer. I really am. She's so annoying.
I guess it was 2 weeks ago on Twitter at Craig Times, you shared the most extraordinary photo of lined notebook pages listing of the books you've read since you were a teenager.
Since I was 15,
Tell us about this incredible record keeping.
Well, okay. So I'm one of those kids who's you know, my mom signed me up for a library card when I was like five, took me to the library, signed me up and told the librarians, and this was great. This is all moms should do this. Told the librarians, don't limit him to the children's section. He can check out a book from any section of the library that he wants to, because she wanted to really encourage me to read. So, you know, I read lots of children's books, but I also read a lot of adult books that went right over my head, you know.
Yeah.
But and every summer they'd have a summer reading program at the library, and if you read a certain number of books, you were qualified for a big ice cream party at the end of the summer. So I always made sure I made that quota, you know. It was like 15 or 16 books, and then I got to a certain age and they said, and I said, okay, I'm here to sign up for the summer reading program. How old are you? Well, I'm 14. Oh, you're too old now. I'm like, what am I going to do with my summer? So I started keeping my own record of what I read that summer, and it has just kept on since then. You know, I still do the handwritten record every year. I start a new page and say, these are the books, you know, C. Pittman's book list for that year. And I've started keeping track of it on Goodreads too, but mostly just, you know, mostly on, I'm still doing the paper.
Astonishing. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about a 40-year record of reading, and you, I don't think there's anyone listening to this podcast who doesn't wish they did read more. You're the guy who actually does it. I mean, you, what was it last? Did you make one a week last year? Wasn't
that your goal? I actually exceeded. I made it to, I think, 55.
Oh my gosh.
Last year. And my other goal, and I just started this a few years ago, I realized I'd made my goal of 52 books a year, but only 9 of them were by women, which is horrible. Mm-hmm. And looking at it, I went, I need to do more. I need to read out of my comfort zone. I need to start reading books by female authors, even if they're not mysteries or thrillers or stuff like that. So I started adding a lot more diversity into my reading. And I have really found books I've really enjoyed that I would not have previously ever paid much attention to. Circe, for instance, which is a terrific book using Greek mythology as a basis for a novel. Just a great read, you know, things like that. So,
what percentage do you say have some connection to Florida of what you read?
Oh gosh. Maybe 25%.
That's all, huh?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm trying to read widely, and a lot of what I read is, you know, murder mysteries and stuff like that. So of course I'm reading the latest by Carl Heiss and Tim Dorsey, you know, people like that. But, okay, I guess some of it you'd say partly Florida, partly not, like the Bald Eagle book.
Bald Eagle, Jack Davis. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's partly involving people from Florida, absolutely, but partly not. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've done a great job in bringing a lot of awareness to Florida authors and different sort of genres. All of the guests we have, it should be known, Craig schedules these folks out, books all the guests, so many of them are authors, and you've read, I dare say, all of those books, and it is remarkable. You know, Craig, you know, all of the incredible knowledge and insight he has, that isn't just waking up in the morning and watching television. I mean, you really do the work of reading and getting out and reporting and talking to people.
Say, if you're going to write, you got to read. You know, reading other authors informs my writing. And sometimes I learn little tricks I didn't know before. I'll give you, for instance, when I was writing The Scent of Scandal, which is a sort of a true crime book involving orchids. In fact, it was weirdly classified as true crime slash gardening. I realized I wanted to write it more like a mystery than my two previous books. So I used shorter sentences, and I deliberately ended each chapter on a sort of a cliffhanger so that people would want to read to the next chapter. And that really, people really responded to that. They told me they really liked that. So I thought, you know, maybe I could use that in the next few books too. So, well, and sentences are usually pretty good anyway.
And I'm sure we'll talk about this down the road, but maybe we can, you always ask authors, what are you working on next? And you have a taste for people of what you're working on next, as your most recent book was published back in September, Florida Men, Florida Women, and Other Wildlife. What are you working on next?
Well, I got a big surprise today. Folks who published my second book, Manatee Insanity, University Press of Florida, it never sold well enough to justify putting it in paperback. They contacted me today, 10 years after the book came out, and said, okay, now we're going to put out a paperback.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And so look it over and see if anything needs updating. I'm like, oh my God, everything needs updating.
Yeah, really. You know? But you've actually, the Python is going to be the focus of the next original book, right?
I'm working on the book proposal on that right now. Fingers crossed that you know, the publishers don't turn up their nose at it. Because that's, I mean, honestly, this is one of the things that drives me nuts is the last three books I came up with, two of them went to New York publishers. And initially, the folks in New York were like, no, nobody wants to read about Florida. No, Florida's not interesting. And it just makes me want to tear out what's left of my hair. Because, you know, we've got such great authors here in Florida, yeah. And people think, oh, Florida literature, that's Carl Heiss. And it stops and ends there. No, there's Lauren Groff. There's Jack Davis. There's all these people who are writing, Cynthia Barnett, who are writing great books that sell really well and are really interesting and win awards. And it's not just the wacky crime stuff. Okay. Yeah. Although those are fun too.
Sure. Sure. It is a big part of Florida, the literature, the authors, the books. Welcome to Florida.
Welcome to Florida. Go read a book.